What if I told you you could be anywhere you want to be in just 3 years? It's true. By staying hyper-focused on your goals and purpose, you can make your vision a reality in just a few short years or even sooner. The trick is, you have to build the routine that will support you in getting there. The good news, we've already done the hard part for you. We created a free 5-minute morning routine tailored specifically to you. It's delivered straight to your inbox each morning, is designed to help you supercharge your mornings with clarity, focus, and inspiration. By committing to this 5-minute routine daily, you'll create total clarity on your purpose and goals, inspiration to help you build a lasting habit, and the life that you want in just 3 years. The best part, this tool is totally free. No strings attached, just valuable resources to help your inner and outer growth. So if you're looking for a short, easy morning routine that will help you, one, stay laser focused on your vision you have for your life, and two, help you make progress towards that vision every single day, head to adamhergenrother.com/future or visit the link in the show notes to create your future self today. Hey everybody, I'm Adam Hergenrother, and this is Business Meets Spirit Chatter. We believe in personal growth through business success. Today, my co-host, Hallie, is jumping in. And by the way, we did a podcast in the afternoon. It's not as good in the afternoon as I am in the morning for doing podcasts. Yeah. Even when I'm on other people's show, for some reason, I seem to do them in the afternoon. Do you ever notice that I seem to do them in the afternoon? I don't know, a lot of people do them in the afternoon.
Well, I think a lot of people are West Coast and
well, they need to get on the East Coast.
And or you're doing international ones.
Who lives in the West Coast?
The only time that works is the afternoon. It's a scheduling thing. But you know, I do wonder if we were used to the afternoons, we would just like, it just did feel like off yesterday because we were just in such a rhythm of doing them on Wednesday morning.
Well, I also think we did that one particular on Zoom, which is different too. The audio was kind of hit or miss on it a little bit. So I think if we get the right equipment for that, it's part of it. But I think you do get into these rhythms too of finding it and kind of preparing yourself for it. I'm also just better if I teach all day, and I'm sure people listening are in the same thing. Like when you get towards the end, it's fun just to have conversations, but to be kind of on and deliver what you want to in a podcast takes more energy than it does in the morning. And that's why, honestly, it was part of you, because
that's like your probably a bit of your chronotype.
I think it's 90% of people.
I think it's a lot of people, but not everybody.
I think it's 90%. 90% is what we disagreed to. So I'm glad it's there for that. No, but I also think this kind of goes to our topic of conversation today, which is really how to think like a CEO, right?
Which means doing podcasts in the morning, apparently.
Yeah, well, no, like thinking like a CEO. And like not even that you're the CEO of your company, right? You may be listening to this, but you're also the CEO of your life, which I think for, particularly for anybody, I think being the CEO is we'll get into the four kind of things that we think, you know, of how like tactics, you know, ground up leadership tips, to think like a CEO. But one of them is actually knowing, well, the first one kind of jumping right into it is creating energy. And I think creating energy can, like, it's not necessarily physical energy, which can be physical energy. It's just momentum, right? It's creating a more streamlined approach. It's actually elimination of things to create more energy that becomes focused. I think that's kind of what I was trying to struggle to say there, was that, like, it's literally, when I think about creating energy for the organization, and regardless of what organization I'm leading in that moment, it's about narrowing the focus for people so that we can create energy that becomes harnessed energy into the organization, right?
Can I give you, like, let's talk about a real life example that this just happened.
Yes.
Because I wonder from your perspective, and even I'm just thinking in my own leadership journey, how do you make sure that you're creating energy that's, it feels good for you, but how do you also make sure it works for other people? So let's use an example. You sent me an email this morning and you specifically did it because you wanted to create more focus, clarity, and energy on around a particular project, right?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
In urgency.
And that probably felt amazing to you to send that email. You're like, yes, focusing Hallie, focusing the team. Well, mostly me, right? Can you agree to that?
Yes.
Okay. I get that email and it certainly created a lot of energy for me as well, but it was not positive energy.
Yes.
So talk to me about that.
Well, I think as a leader, you have to understand things that you're trying to get across. And for me, I knew that it would spark a
a sense of urgency for you to kind of move on what we need to do, even though that you're probably waiting on a few things for me and on those particular things. I just wanted more movement towards it. And so we kind of move it forward. I also think everybody's individually different. So I could have probably approached it a little bit differently with you, maybe just even had the conversation here, but I almost sent the email as more of like, let's talk about this. And I think a lot of leaders try to do that, is at least I do this. Like, I'll send myself emails or send other people emails. And it's not like we have to do this tomorrow, but it's more of like, let's make sure that this becomes a priority. And because a lot of times we do have a lot of ideas and a lot of things come in there. And if there isn't somebody to kind of regulate that off of, then we end up doing everything, you whiplash the company. So creating this focus, this energy for your organization is about streamlining things, saying no to a lot of stuff and keeping the focus on what the priorities are. And so for me, sending that particular email about kind of re-engaging that focus, the urgency was there, is let's have the conversations. Because the minute you came in, you said, well, that's not reasonable. I go, okay. Like, it wasn't, so it wasn't, it was more about, let's make sure we're having the conversation. It was in this thought, I needed to get it out there. And
yes, and I probably could have interpreted it that way. I didn't interpret it that way.
You took it for 100% like, oh my God, this has got to be done in a period of time and it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. And there's just a lot of ambiguity and overthinking, and I don't have the answers that I need to actually do what you want. And, you know, I'm making like all these things, but it didn't also make me think like, I probably do that to people too. And I'm not aware of that very, like, the type of energy. Yeah. You definitely created a ton of energy in me, but it was really not great for me personally, but it's still going to actually get the right, it's going to get the best, it's going to get a great result. And that's probably more on me, that needing to regulate that energy a bit better. But again, I'm just thinking, man, as a leader, I likely do that to other people. Like, this is my priority. I want this, I have the sense of urgency and I want to imbue that and instill that into other people. And yet I might not be, I'm not saying that you did this. I'm just saying that I've done this before where I may not deliver it so well. And therefore I'm actually
I do that
some
too.
Anxious and overwhelming energy for others.
Yeah. I think
it felt great to me because I get it off my chest.
Yeah. I think it's also, I also wonder how many people wouldn't actually share what you shared. Like, they just said, oh, this is great. And when I can share the fact that they've created anxiety around this or different pressure. And I think part of having an organization that's open is within the hour of me sending that email, you're able to have the conversation with me about it. Or you follow up with the conversation when you send an email saying, hey, let's discuss this and let's just make sure. There's probably some things you can say in the email that says, hey, I'm just putting this on notice. Let's have a conversation about this. Ideally, this would be like the goal. Is this realistic or not? So there's probably some pre-qualifications in the email that you can send, particularly, but for me, I was on my bike and I paused for a second and I was like, I really want to get this thing done.
Yeah. I mean, also I don't want to, it's also me, like, whatever, we always figure it out. So I feel like you don't have to be as like careful.
I think
you would need to with other people.
But I think it's also just as a template, as people listening to this, that energy is that kind of key component. And this can go, some people do this in emails, some people do this just in meetings, is that whiplash component of, it's like stop, go, this thing over here, this thing over there. Actually, a really good mentor of mine, somebody that works closely with them, said, hey, you know, I get emails or thoughts about doing all these different things all the time, and I ignore all of them unless they show up again and then again, and then maybe we'll take some action towards them. And I thought that was just kind of interesting. This is a, you know, very well-known individual. So it was just really interesting to kind of hear that happens at all levels. And I think people, at least for me, when I see things, it's almost like you got to get it out there and then see if it almost takes roots. And I think this is part of being a really good leader, is to know when and who to send these different things to, or maybe you just need to journal about them, or maybe you just need to let that part go and see if it keeps showing back up. And if it does, then how do you have the conversations? But creating energy in an organization is, I think, one of the most important things that a CEO can do. This, by the way, you can extrapolate this conversation from being a CEO of your business, CEO of your life, and the CEO of your family. And I'm not saying you run your family. I'm just saying you can.
I can see it as being a leader.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Just kind of using the term CEO. But the reality is just at some certain times you're a janitor. I walked into the building and I see trash. I pick it up and I don't do it so I can mention this in the podcast or whatever it is. Like, you just, you do it, right? And there's other times you've got to see opportunities where you have to make key decisions and hires and fires and where the direction or saying no to different things. Like there a day in our construction company, like there's this great project. And I said, look, everyone wanted to do it. And I just said, we're distracted too many things. Like there's too many other projects. I understand this looked good to everybody. We just can't do it. And it was an unpopular decision, but then everyone understood why, like, yeah, you're actually right. Like, we need to go back. I said, we don't have the bandwidth to do what we're doing now.
Right.
Adding something else on there, even though you're going to kick the can, 3 weeks shows up so fast. A month shows up so fast, and it's like, it seems so far away, yet everyone's already maxed and doesn't have that capacity. So knowing the energy component comes to knowing what you're directing your team into, right? It's like, if you took a professional athlete and you said, okay, today we're going to run. And then, you know, they're a professional baseball player and today we're going to run. We're going to play some golf and then we're going to go swim. Right. And then we're going to go play some more golf and then we're going to come back and we're going to focus on polo or whatever the conversations are. You get the point. It's like, really professional people at what they're really good at is staying focused on key things. And I think that's, as a leader, one of the most important things you do is to make sure you're not having distractions in your organization that pull people's energy away. Because in my experience, people want to show up and do really good work. They want to be productive. They want to contribute. And of course they want to be paid. They want to be paid for their work and valued for their work, not just in terms of money. That's like the value for their contribution that they're providing. I think people really want to know that they're contributing. And of course you are. And the more you actually get somebody enabled to feel contributed or feel valued is by keeping their energy focused on something so they can see it through. And I think as whether you're a leader or CEO or just you're running a project or you're excited to go out for a hike with your family, like you keep the energy flowing, right? I mean, if you have kids, you understand this. It's like, okay, we're going to go, you know, for a hike. And they're like, I don't want to go, right? There's all these different things. And it's like, no, come on, it's going to be fun. We're going to do this way. We're going to get to the top. You're kind of painting the vision. And then when they get into it, they experience it and it's fun. And then you're kind of coaching them through. So it's the same thing you do in your organization, right? It's just like you're keeping the energy directed and focused and you're almost eliminating other things to show up in there so you can create that level of energy. And I think people can make a lot of mistakes with this is by having too many things on people's plates, not keeping it simple enough, mm-hmm. right? Particularly in real estate, we see this is there's a lot of different ways to do a deal, right? To procure a buyer or seller into a buying a property or selling a property in a lot of different ways. And there's people are always trying to find different ways to throw in there on their staff or their agents. And it's actually the wrong approach to it because they don't really get good at anything. Instead of keeping it very simple on what they do and having a production playbook that allows them to focus purely on what it is they need to do, or in construction or in brokerages or even founder and force multiplier of like how many times we're like, oh, we could do this. Well, we can't do that focus right now. We've got to focus on this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I feel like it applies to one way or another to every business. I mean, I think about social media. Like, it's like, do you be on every 15 social yes. media platforms
yeah.
or do you pick three that you can actually invest into and build that up or build an audience and then maybe move on
yes.
to the next? Because otherwise you are just diluting your focus. You only have so much time and energy to spend.
And then when you're on, the question on social media goes, are you more of like, hey, this is my personality on social media, or is it more content driven? Right. So like you could have like,
you could argue that personality is content.
Yeah. I guess my point would be is somebody like, I think of like somebody who is like an influencer, right. Who is mm-hmm. out there like showcasing their life, showcasing what they're doing. They're constantly on there. They may have 50 million people looking at their stuff. That's great. Mm-hmm. Or you have somebody more like Ray Dalio who is using social media, but he's not talking about what he did throughout the day. I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
Yeah.
He's creating content using social media to do it. So there's different ways to direct your energy on social media. I mean, Ray Dalio isn't posting different things.
No. All I'm saying is that influencers are content creators. It's just a different type of content.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Where yeah. do you put your energy though? Sure. I didn't say they weren't content creators. Yeah. I'm just saying they create their content a different way.
Right.
And they use the same distribution method to doing it. Right. Everyone just kind of does it differently
yes.
for what they are. And I think that's what part of understanding your organization is, that when you create your own energy, what energy are you going to bring to the organization? How do you show up bringing the energy and make sure you stay in that zone?
Mm-hmm.
For me, I mean, I really enjoy, I like actually teaching and coaching a lot to people. I think a lot of CEOs do in general. And I also, the other thing with me though, is I really like making very difficult decisions that nobody else wants to make. Like I enjoy sitting in the kind of the pain or the kind of agony at times it can be, or the stress, if you will. It just doesn't bother me the same way. So I actually enjoy being the one that nobody else can do certain things or they don't want to necessarily make those different decisions for it. For me, and I think a lot of leaders have that. You've given this example.
Responsible for making the decision, because I'm happy to make the decision. Yeah, they don't. I would love to make a tough decision, but I don't want to be responsible necessarily for the result or the consequence.
Well, isn't that the whole point of making a decision?
I'm just saying I can make the decision. Yes. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's a good way of saying it. I'm sure people can make the decision.
Yeah.
They don't want the consequence or the potential consequence that could happen
That's
from the different decisions.
Yeah.
For a lot of different people. And I think I think a lot of people, you probably make more decisions than you're giving yourself credit for. Cause I remember I said this before, and I think you said the same thing for you, is that when I was growing up, I always wanted things to happen to me so that they wouldn't have to happen to other people. It was like, oh, like, okay, if like, I'm going to get hurt between my brother and I, like I'll get hurt because I can handle it better than he can.
Yeah, sure.
And it's like that same type of, I always kind of go back to, cause it's been something in my life. It's like, oh, well, something has, like, I used to think like, oh man, if we have to go to war, Tommy's not going to make it. Right.
I actually have a lot of confidence in myself that way too. I'm like, if there's an apocalypse, like, you know what? I'm not like perfectly in shape, but for some reason I just am confident that I would survive.
Yeah, I know. Well, survive as far as you can, right? Like you're ready to charge the storm, right? Like you're versus, and I think it's part of that is leaders, I believe, charge the storm. And that's why regardless of what outlet that storm is, like the bison, right, is a powerful example of this. And we were teaching this yesterday where a bison is one of the group of animals that is rare. When a storm comes, they don't actually retreat from it. They don't hide from it. They actually charge towards the storm to get through it faster. Mm-hmm. And I think that's ultimately what high level leaders are doing, is that they're charging the storms in any aspects of their life. It can be in business. It could be a personal conversation. It could be a tough conversation with your brother or your sister or your parents. It could be, you know, my mom's always kind of jokes with my brother. She's like, you know, Adam gets to make the decision, you know, if I am on like life support, whether or not to do this. She's like, because I just don't think you can make it, Tommy. And he hates that.
That's so funny. I'm the decision maker.
Yes,
all
she's like,
too.
She's like, I know you probably could, but like, I know it'd be easier for Adam. Yeah, and I'm like, well, what do you mean it's gonna be easier for me?
That's so funny.
But I think that's part of it is it's not that there's not empathy or there's not compassion. It's just that you're willing to make the decision when things are there. And I think that all drives towards energy though. Like that's part of the energy is making the decision, because now once the decision is made, people go. Like if all of a sudden you say, we're going to go walk to the store, everyone now has energy walking to the store, right? When you're making decision, which kind of goes with, kind of like teaching others, if you will, which is number. So number one, we kind of look at as like, as really thinking like a CEO, which is creating this energy. And I think we've kind of tackled that too, but I'll jump into what I was going to say in a second. The second one is kind of teaching others, which is, what would you say about teaching others?
I wouldn't say just teaching others. I think it's about teaching other people how to think.
How to think.
Think critically, think strategically, and think, especially in a work environment, thinking similar to you or whoever the leader is. Perhaps.
Principles, similar to the principles.
To the principles, so that they understand the decision-making framework, so that they too can start making some of those decisions, and maybe you can start delegating some of those decisions to other people in the organization and teaching them to ask powerful questions and teaching them to be curious and, again, teaching them to problem solve and just to think for themselves.
Yes.
I think is just super important for a leader.
Yeah, authorship is ownership, right? And I think when you're teaching other people to think, what you're really doing is you're getting them to author their outcome or their decision, which then they own it more, which is then they own the decision more and they put more energy towards it. So that's why, like, even like we do a thing called, that's called the Livian liftoff, right? Which is every morning agents and people in general get together every morning, sometimes in 8:30 and 9:15, depending on where they are at and their particular team. But what they do is they basically go through the model for that is three things. What are you grateful for? Right? Did you hit your commitments yesterday? And what are your commitments today? And we've seen that agents and in general, people are 7 times more effective at actually going after and getting what their commitments are if they publicly share them. And so I think that's again, all you're doing there is you're directing energy. If you're saying it, now you're going to be, your RAS is up, right? All of a sudden you start getting more locked in. Doesn't mean you're going to hit it every time, but you're 7 times more likely to go after and hit those different things. And I think by teaching people to think is by teaching them to direct their own energy and then having authorship, which is meaning coming up with their own answers by you asking a series of questions so they can come up with their answers and come up with the solutions. They go out there now, own the outcome way more. It doesn't mean every time, but they're going to own it more than they are if you coming down in acro, either micromanaging or telling them what to do. Now, look, there are times when you need to do that. But the majority of the time, and that's typically when somebody's either, they're really lost. They really need help. Like they're searching for somebody. Just go tell me what to do. Right.
Can we use another example? Cause I'm also just curious. Yeah. So let's just use the same email example that we talked about earlier. Cause I think it kind of applies to what you just said. Interestingly, in that email, you didn't actually give me a specific deadline.
I know.
So yeah, it's just occurring to me, like, is it because you wanted me to come up with maybe a plan of how we were going to tackle this and maybe give you a deadline, or it was because, so therefore I would have ownership over getting it done in a time frame that ultimately would work for both of us, but maybe I had more ownership over, or did you even give it that much thought? You know what I mean?
Well, no, I think, I knew that the email would piss you off, and I don't mean in a bad way or a good way. I just know that it would instantly go,
it would create
okay,
energy.
He's serious about this.
Yeah.
But
yet there was no deadline.
I know you, but then you went into your own freak out mode, which goes like, okay, he wants it done in like a day and you can't have it happen. And you start going, how am I supposed to do this? And I got this other book that I got to go on. I've got all these different things going on here. And you got caught in your mind.
Yes.
And then from there, right. But that was not intended to happen.
Yeah.
It was more of just like,
well, that's
hey,
on me, but yeah.
Yeah. We need to go attack this. And now I want you, and you came in and you, the first thing you said, well, we can do this. We're going to do this. And I said, yeah, let's do that. And you said, I said, great. And it's almost like you were looking for a more complex answer.
And even
to
before
it.
That, I'd already sent you an email outlining an entire plan on
there
how to get it done.
There. Perfect. That's exactly right.
You just have to agree to what I want to do.
Well, then it's authorship.
Yeah.
Because now you've authored it to me.
Yes.
And now you're going to own it.
That's
to
correct.
All of our listeners. but again, that's just kind of like that when you're teaching others to think, like it's like.
But I do think that's a good example of, minus the like the freak out part, but that's a little bit me and stuff I need to keep working on.
But you know what's funny is that
you did teach me how to think, and I was immediately into, okay, well. How am I going to get this done?
And think about this too. Think about like 7 years ago, if I sent the email, how long you would have freaked out for until now.
And I wouldn't have even said anything. Yeah.
That's what I mean. So that's the real personal growth. And the interesting thing is that everyone, like some people would read that and like not cared. Right. But then there's other things that I share with you that you don't care about that would freak other people out.
Sure. Yeah.
And so like, it's just really understanding each individual, that's why behavioral assessments and different things, just getting to know somebody, like genuinely trying to understand somebody is you can figure out how they can author their own thing. Cause it's going to be a little bit different. And this is why, you know, we're creating all these playbooks right now. And it's like, you see everyone, you know, these 8 talented individuals that are some of the highest level thinkers trying to create these things. And they all want like, well, it's gotta be this. And it's like, what about this? And you can't create a playbook for all of those different examples, because that's leadership. That's actually thinking like a CEO, and that becomes a principle. I always bring everyone back and go, that's not, look, sure, you could create one for everything, but nobody would ever read it because it'd be 1,100 pages long and you'd have to come back and look at it like a dictionary to look up every single word.
They may want to create a different addendum for this.
Yes. Or like, okay, what happens if this situation happens? I've had this happen before. And you're going, well, man, if you outline all of these, nobody's going to take the inherent teachings of how to teach people how to think that way so they can be their own CEO in these,
and when those
with these playbooks.
Come up, they can handle them on their own.
They can learn how to handle them. That's why principles or manifestos, right? Are really good because they're a set of decision-making beliefs with this, you're authoring them to own their decisions. Right. And that's, I think part of being a leader, is one of the key things is how to actually make decisions. Like when you are a leader, decisions are your product. I know we talk about that in the article, but like it's really when you're empowering other people to think, one of the things you're doing is you're empowering them to make decisions so they can author it, but you've got to give them the framework for which they make decisions in. And then there's always going to be gray in leadership. And this is why it's challenging, because every situation is slightly different. Every situation involves somebody different. It's like, okay, if somebody's not performing, oh, fire them. Why? Well, hold on. Maybe. What are they just in a different season? Is there something personal going on in their life? How long have they been with you? Right. What does underperforming mean?
Have you not set clear expectations?
That's what I mean.
What have you not done to help them?
And people listening to this are like, yeah, it's always something. Of course, that's leadership. There is a reason why people are in leadership, and it's not because it's you get paid more or it's sexier or it's easier. People have this notion of it, right? but it's actually further from the truth. It's just as hard on the tail side of a coin that it is on the head side of a coin, right? It's just a different side of a coin. It's just different things that you end up having to deal with. And so authorship, when you're getting people, so part of treating, you know, thinking like a CEO is creating energy and getting people to author and own their outcomes and their decisions that they're making, so they don't have to come to you for all these different things. You're teaching people how to think.
Yeah, I was going to say, so that actually brings us very nicely into the third one, yes, which is about empowering, taking that thinking and their ability to think like a CEO, and then harnessing that into decision-making, and specifically making sure you're delegating the decision-making, because I do think that if you don't do that, sometimes people don't know whether or not what decisions are actually theirs to own. So you need to let them know what decisions they can own.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, think of like bumper cars, right? Like they have a bumper, they're going to make mistakes in there, but like people have to be able to do this. And it's, look, this has been talked about for centuries, like, okay, letting people fail. But I think my comment on this is that a lot of leaders say they let people fail, but they really don't. Mm-hmm. They're either condescending when they fail. It's like there's like this, they may not say it, but there's this energy around them that's like, see, you failed again. Like I told you, you shouldn't be doing this. And they're like, oh, but it's fine. But they don't really believe it. Right. There's just like this energy that's around them. That's like, yeah, you say that,
but oh, it's okay. But
it's
really,
okay. Or it's like, oh no, they're up on stage or they're talking to somebody in their interview or on a podcast. Right. And they're like, oh no, our people fail. And you actually talk to people that are in their organization. They're like, that doesn't even happen. That does not happen. It's like and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's just being aware. I think a lot of people aren't even aware that they're doing it. That's why we bring it up here, is that, you know, when you say you're allowing people to fail, or like you're allowing your kids to fail, or whatever it is in every situation, or you're allowing yourself to fail, are you even saying it for you? Are you taking yourself so seriously to the point where you're not even allowing yourself to fail? And so you've set a new bar within you that you see in everybody else.
I feel like I'm just thinking about this. It feels like it's such a fine line though, between being understanding about mistakes or failures. I'm just thinking from my own experience in leadership, and there's such a fine line between that and really being, what was I going to say? There's a fine line between being understanding, because people are humans and we're not robots, and I can't just program someone to do exactly what I want them to do. And then also having such high standards and expectations that I do expect them to do exactly what I want them to do.
Comes from clarity.
So what do you do?
Well, I think you first of all, you find people that have very similar expectations for you in your life, in terms of those type of things, right? You just do. And then you also understand that depending on what your level of expectations are, is somebody may not always meet your expectations in the same way that you expect them to be met, but the outcome is still, or the result is still the same. It just may look a little bit differently.
I'm okay
in the
with
path
that.
With that. Yeah. Well, I think it also really comes down to is, if people are failing, are they failing at the same thing multiple times, or is it just different failures? Because failing at the same thing kind of at some point becomes unacceptable, just in the industry, right? But are they, and here's the other thing is just, look, Tom Brady probably has less failures than his linemen, right? Or whatever it is, like there's going to be like, he probably has a higher expectation for his body work, his, what he eats, all those different things, right? And the rest of the team around him has a very high standard because of the NFL, but maybe not to the highest degree he does. And so that's also why he's valued more in terms of professional football, not as a human being. But so in the sport that you're playing, and if your sport is business, then you try to surround yourself with the highest level people that you can. But understand at some point, if you keep raising your own standards for different things, like I'm not sure everyone had the same standards as Steve Jobs. Right. Like, I don't know if he was ever to that point. The number one thing that I would tell you or anybody is that you want to make sure that you're not suffering because of that. And I think a lot of people are. And so are you interacting with it from a place of clarity, or are you getting pissed off and suffering? Because that's what suffering is. Suffering isn't like somebody broke your arm. Suffering isn't like somebody stepping on you or in a chokehold. That's physical suffering. I'm talking emotionally suffering over something that you're imposing on yourself. And I think a lot of people end up suffering themselves because they get frustrated that somebody's not there. It doesn't mean you can't feel frustrated. Then let it go and then look at it clearly and saying, okay, you know, is it that they're just not going to hit my expectations, or is it that I need to replace somebody? Or is it that I need to be more, clear on what the actual outcome needs to be so that we're actually hitting that. And then at the end of the day, people are just not going to be as good at other people as certain things they do, right?
Well, as you're talking, it's just making me, the part that kind of came together for me is that it's why it's so important to bring people into the organization that have that those similar work ethic is, I guess, the best way to say it. And like they also hold themselves to a high standard and are super committed to and dedicated to their work because for me personally, that's where I often have the first, it's not because they made a mistake and, I just need to teach them how to do something different. I could do that all day long. It's that commitment and level of dedication that is hard to,
I think,
always find.
I think that the only comment I'm going to make on this is that I don't think we should reward people in the world more because they have a longer work ethic.
Work ethic does not mean time.
I know. I'm any of those things that you're saying. I still think, and this is,
well, then my whole career was based on nothing.
Well,
is that what you're saying?
No, not at all. What I'm saying is that's because that's your nature. Like you generally you like to be very, very productive. You like to be involved in those things, but that's you. Right.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. Yeah. I'm just saying in.
Yeah. But I guess I just on the other side, like you probably wouldn't want to work with anybody who didn't have that same level of work ethic.
I know.
Oh yeah. And so I don't want to either.
Yeah. What I'm just saying is to be very careful that as a society, we're not valuing, like today, this morning, I had a wonderful conversation with a bus driver and you know what? Their work ethic is not mine. And it's not going to be. They're a wonderful human being. And I just stopped and thought, and like, we've undervalued these simple roles in our lives and just in general in communities. And they play such an important role. Like my kids love riding the bus now because the bus driver is so awesome. Yet we undervalue that without even recognizing it.
I guess it just depends on what you are considering work ethic. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm just, I'm not saying any specific to your role or anybody else that's in an organization. I'm just saying in general, as a society, we wake up and say, if you're not this, then
Well, how do we know that he's not just as committed to his job as I am to mine?
Well, they are, but they don't have your work ethic because they take summers off. I just listened to what they did in the summer and they had a completely different experience than you or I did.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's all I'm saying is like you're valuing work ethic, not necessarily in terms of time, but just how dedicated they are during these things. And we generally would value somebody as a CEO more than we would as a bus driver. Do you agree with that statement? You don't want to, but you're going to.
Our society, sure.
Yes, I'm not saying individual. All I'm pointing out here is just because I just think it's important to note that we undervalue some of the most important people, even police officers or law enforcement.
But I would say they have some of the best work ethic I've ever.
Totally. I'm just taking different sides of all these different components. So it's not one.
I think
to the
we
other.
Maybe are confusing work ethic with like more statusy jobs.
Well, I still think there's this work ethic that says, hey, I expect you to come in here and work a certain number of hours to be able to do a certain type of things. And your dedication to your job needs to be higher. Some people just aren't as dedicated. You know, I was talking to my my aunt Jeannie, who is really interesting. She moved off the grid 20 years ago. She was a physical therapist and her husband was an engineer. They made really good money. They saved up. They moved off the grid and they lived in a yurt for the last 25 years of their life. And they lived in Washington. They moved to Maine. I saw them at a family reunion a couple weeks ago. And I said, hey, what caused you to just get up and move off the grid? And they're like, well, you know, they wanted a certain lifestyle and they didn't mm-hmm. want to, you know, work the man. That's kind of like their language, right? I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but like they didn't want to do that. But the interesting thing about all of that is that they, while they were really happy with their decision, they still suffer at some level. Like actually her husband recently came out and said that he was struggling with this move that they had made and kind of into this area that they're in. And it didn't work out exactly the way he wanted to. And now they're having to work again and do a few different things. And so, we just had a good conversation about just kind of letting all that go and you made the decision. But I think in general, I just see that there's a sense that we overvalue people, based on their monetary value that they come in. And we give it to them versus.
Sure. And all I'm saying is.
We're taking a complete off
that
tangent.
That has nothing to do with work ethic, in my opinion. yeah. monetary.
Oh, no, I'm just
compensation is not work ethic.
Yeah, my whole comment on that is I just think when in general, like
there's I just want to work with people who have the similar work ethic to me, exactly. But I highly, highly value all workers in the world. That's how our economy runs. Yes. Is by all sorts of different people.
Yeah. Let's just use me as an example. It's not putting anybody else. Like people respect me more for what I've done or the money that I have. And I'm not sure that's right. Right.
Do you feel that way?
Oh yeah. I mean, people tell me, yes, they give me things like I have priorities and different stuff. Like I get people move when I ask, like, it's just different. And it's just even moving to a new area. I had things that were opened up to me that most people wouldn't.
Yeah.
Just because of who I was. And I'm not.
There's some value to that. And there's also some.
But, you know, this is just only my own self therapy because I've been thinking about it. It's like, is that right for me to be able to have that? It's just interesting, right? And then Sarah would say, my wife would say, like, well, you're doing it. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, but the option's there. And it was presented to me. I didn't even look for it. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of funny, right? It's just this is different, and it just kind of made me think about these things as we're thinking about
interesting.
Yeah, just in general. So I just use me as that example, just something that I think we can all like. How do you think like a CEO to lift up other people? Like, how do you make them feel? We had this conversation on one of our leadership calls recently. Is how do you make everyone you feel in your organization feel like they're contributing something at the highest level, even if it's very if it's a very small number to the organization, how do you make everybody feel like they're contributing to it? Because everyone wants to feel like they're contributing it somehow, right? So I think part of being a CEO is creating that energy, getting people to think in authorship their ownership, right? Authorship is ownership, getting them to think that way, and then cultivating this ability for them to take and make these decisions, and then making sure that they're feeling that they're contributing to these decisions that they're doing. And as they're contributing towards it, I think it's a very valuable thing, because if people feel like they're contributing to it, they're way more connected to their organization if they feel like they're being valued and contributed. And I don't think I've done a good enough job of making sure everybody in the organization feels like they're contributing in all the different ways that they need to. So that was kind of my tangent there, is like, as I think as myself, as a CEO of organizations, I can do a better job at making sure that everyone feels like they're contributing. And that's kind of what you sparked it for me, not the actual content, but you sparked the conversation in terms of by saying, you know, what's everyone's standards and expectations, because you do have an incredible work ethic and dedication and loyalty that most people are never going to have, right? It's very rare to find that, the level that you have. And I think I think I do a pretty good job of making sure I recognize that with you. I don't do that necessarily with everybody else that isn't the same level as you in terms of dedication. Yet to them, that may be the same level, that may feel the same way to you as that dedication. So in my thought pattern there is like trying to get people to understand that at every level in your organization, you need to make sure people feel like they're contributed. And I think that's part of being a CEO, because when you do that, when people feel like they're contributing, they author that, they have more energy, they mm-hmm. have better decisions for those type of
but
things.
But they're better, they're more engaged, their yes. retention rate goes yes. up, and
yes.
all good yeah. things for the company and for them personally.
Too. Yes. Yeah, because there's always this weird thing when you're running a company, like, sure, you've got your core leadership team that you constantly pour into, but like you need everybody else. Like I think about like a school district needs the bus drivers. They need the principal who works probably more hours than a school teacher, right? So it's like, it's yeah. all these different roles
think
that
about
are
when
there.
When there's like the bus driver strike or
yes,
something
I know.
Like that, like,
and I'm just using yeah. schools as an example. Yeah. This could be in hospitals, could be in military, in police, this could be CEOs, could be nonprofits, it can be anything. I'm just using that as an example of kind of my thinking patterns around, you know, as you think like a CEO, you globally just be aware of blind spots that you have as a leader to that you're not necessarily recognizing the contributions. And like one of the things that we actually have in writing and with Olivian is like recognizing meaningful contributions from everyone. Mm-hmm. Right. And that was something that we put in there, and it's like, that's meaningful to them, because sometimes we're so quick as higher level leaders to almost be like, oh, that's just, we just kind of expect it, which there is, right? There's an expectation you're paying somebody. There's an expectation of goods and services that they're providing for you. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There is that. But can't you go one step further and feel and make sure people look, you know, you don't have to go give them any more money, right? I'm not talking yeah. about monetary. I'm just saying they're recognizing that contribution. As a leader, when yeah. you think like a CEO, I think a lot of our CEOs have lost touch with that or have blind spots to the fact that they think that they're doing it to their key people. And all I'm saying is, you know, keep doing it to your key people, making sure they're doing it to their key people, making sure that meaningful wins, you know, on one of our leadership calls, I don't think you were on it, but I got two videos prior to that. We were discussing it and they were saying, hey, we see a lot of people when they're bringing people in the organization, they're almost dismissing this lower level individual coming in there and they're back channeling that. So I'm going, okay, our organization is getting pretty big. Where is my blind spot on this? Like, how am I not bringing this up enough?
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah. To make sure that people are not taking that for advantage when somebody that may be not at the same level, you know, in business as somebody else, but man, they spent their life doing that. And like, they just wake up and like, oh, so it's just kind of meaningless. This isn't,
or they didn't, or we forget. And this is a bigger issue that I have sometimes that, I might forget that like those people who are at a different level have been doing it for 20 years. And we may, and like somebody who is doing pretty well, they might only be doing it for 2 years and we're trying to compare.
Yeah.
The fact that, well, they're only like 2 or 3 years into their career or into their business.
Yes.
And we're like, oh, but you could be doing so much more. Yeah. In 20 years,
yes, exactly,
you know,
right.
Maybe, but yes, you know, we'll of course help them cut that down significantly.
Yes.
But still, yeah, it's just different. And I think about that even in my own career and I'm comparing myself to somebody who may oftentimes I'm comparing myself to people who have been in industry for 20, 30, 40, 50, you know, 50 years. And it just,
yeah. Or, and then, and you know, as from a monetary standpoint, people compare themselves to like Warren Buffett, who's got all this money, but the reality is he's still doing the exact same thing he did today, just maybe not as intense as he was doing when he was in 40s and his 30s. He actually hasn't changed it. Mm. And by the way, he made majority of his wealth, I think it's like 99% of it after like 59 or 55
yeah, definitely
years
after 55,
old
yeah.
to be able to do it up until there. And that kind of is,
I think about that too. Sorry, this is another tangent, but there's this, I'm sure a lot of our listeners may have heard of this other podcaster, Kathy Heller. She's been doing her podcast for, and of course created like this whole community and whatever. She started her podcast with like a 10-day-old baby when she was 37. And yeah. I also think of some of the Real Housewives, like Bethany Frankel, who was on the Real Housewives when she was 37, selling like her goods in like Whole Foods. And now she has this massively built brand. And I am 37.
Yes.
And these are people are just like barely starting these things. And they're both wildly successful now.
Yeah. Or even Colonel Sanders, right? Let's go back to KFC. I don't know.
I feel like my two examples were a little bit more relevant.
They were, but I mean, was that guy like 64 and he got his first retirement check?
Yeah,
and he's like,
amazing.
I can't live off this. And so he went and started selling his, and it was like 1,099 no's, or I don't know what the exact number
is,
but it was a lot. And finally he got one yes, and then KFC was born. It's but it's just business. It's just, in general, like you can make a decision anytime you want in your life to do anything. Whether in any category of your life, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's just part of this. So just kind of recapping and kind of tying it back in here of really framing you to think like a CEO, think like a leader in all aspects of your life, right? Which is, do you have energy? Like in your family, are you creating positive energy, right? Is that energy there, right? I gave you this prime example of this, and we'll move on because I know we're getting there. But like yesterday, I was playing lacrosse with my son, and my daughter came out and she wanted to play soccer. So I was playing with her and she went in the goal and like Asher was practicing his move on me and he shot the crossball and didn't realize she was in the net, hit her in the elbow. And you know, of course that hurt a lot and different things. And my first reaction was like, I wanted to be pissed at Asher for like him doing it, but it was a total accident. Right. And so as I'm walking in there, he's like, it was an accident. You know, of course he's crying, she's crying, all this stuff. And I'm going, I need to make sure my energy is not directed towards him for wanting to blame him for this. I'm out there as the parent. I knew she was in the net. I knew I was working on this thing. So if anybody, this comes down to me.
Yeah.
And as every part of me wanted to be like, see, Asher, you can't do this, right? And I started to say that and literally I paused and I said, you know what? I said, it was an accident. It hurts. I get it. I shouldn't have really done this. And it was like, and it didn't, they kind of didn't like go, oh, thanks dad. Right. But they were instantly like, you could feel the energy in the room shift.
Yeah.
It was just, and it was, but it took everything I had to not want to engage in that lower part of me to be like, are you kidding me? Like, cause I could have had all right to do that. Right. Cause he shot it and different things. And then we did talk about, hey, sure. I should have been overlooking there, but also in the future, before you shoot that, you know that she was there. You should make sure you have eye contact. And we can, of course, there's things you can learn. That's what I mean by creating energy in your family, in your business, in terms of keeping people directed in the things they're doing, in your personal relationships. And then obviously teaching others how to think, right? That's a really big one. Authorship is ownership. getting people to make their own decisions and owning those decisions. And as they start to do, everybody in your organization starts to think like a CEO. So you have a same set of principles that people are living and making decisions off of and keeping people focused. And that's a whole organization creates momentum and is able to push through and as an organization tackle a storm, right? So everybody's running towards that storm. If you kind of bring that analogy into play as you create that momentum and all the things we just talked about, if you do, you're able to tackle the storm head on. Thanks for hanging with us today. For those of you who recognize the power of a strategic partnership, you can get a short, impactful, and timely email from us every Thursday that'll be your guide for how to achieve more together. The Inner Circle is for founders, leaders, entrepreneurs, and their chiefs of staff, executive assistants, and right-hand partners who want to learn how to cast a vision, navigate change, lead together, build impactful businesses, and just get shit done. If you're interested, go to founderenforcemultiplier.com/innercircle to sign up.